blaze it, man.
Could you say that again?
Let's blaze it.
One more time.
Brandon, one more.
Let's blaze it.
Yeah, all right.
All right. Are we started?
To episode 2 of Card Knock Life. We're here to talk competitive constructive with you today. I am Corey Murphy, your host, and I'm here with our host, Brandy No Fetch Brainstorm Semerow.
Hello.
Zhuming All Foils No Scrubs Chen.
Hello.
Daryl Big DZ Feltner.
Hey.
John Red Deck Galley.
Yo.
And actually, that's the end of our list. I should put an and in there. We're going to start out with a little bit of a discussion on the tournament recap from this week, particularly the Dragons of Tarkir impact on Standard and all of that, and Legacy and Modern, and go into some news regarding MTGO, a little Tempest Cube update, as well as some local tournaments that we have going on in the Madison and Milwaukee area, where we are all from, except for Brandon, who is... In the deep woods of Hannibal, Missouri right now.
Mark Twain's birthplace.
Yes, Mark Twain's birthplace. And a deck tech on a Standard deck this week. And wrap up with a leg day segment, which Daryl will explain later. So we're going to start out with the tournament reports and looking at Standard tournament reports first, as there is a lot of change going on in those. Two Star City-related tournaments this week. There's the Invitational and the Open. Just kind of read down the list for these to start out with. So I'm pulling up our list here. In the Star City Games, what is this, the Open or the Invitational? Jeskai Heroic is in first place.
That's the Open.
Open? Okay. All right, so in the Open, we've got Jeskai Heroic in first place, Abzan Aggro in second, Red-Green Aggro in third, Green-Red Monsters in fourth, Green-White Devotion in fifth, Jeskai Tokens sixth, Jeskai Aggro seventh, and Red-Green Aggro in 8th. If you guys want to just kind of click in and open on a couple of these decks, we can talk a little bit, starting with the Jeskai Heroic deck. Looking at this one, it's pretty standard blue-white heroic list that splashes red for just one card, which kind of is surprising to me. This is the Teemer Battle Rage.
Yeah. This is, this is something that's been going on with Jeskai Heroic recently. There's been a couple lists where it's splashed for that card. This looks to me more like Joe Lawsett just, and I don't know, Daryl, maybe I pronounced that wrong. I know you're kind of buddies with him, but...
Yeah, it's he passed it finally.
Okay. But anyways, I think this is more the power of him triumphing here over rather than like anything from the list being special. Because, like, we've seen that, and I think he's just good at piloting it. It's kind of like Tom Ross just piloting Infect and Mono Red well.
I will say, looking at the Jeskai Heroic deck, one card that stands out to me huge, and it's a new Dragons card, is Scepter Soul. Like, that card is a beating for your opponent, because a lot of times your opponents would try and cast a removal spell on your turn, and you'd get a protection, attack, rebound it next turn. And if they try and cast a removal spell at sorcery speed on their turn, which is sort of something you're taught, you know, hey, sometimes you just fire off the removal spell at sorcery speed, even though it's an instant, just to try and get your opponent to, like, blow their tricks and then be able to, like, interact with them later. Well, this blows your opponent's trick, but then it rebounds and gives you the unblockable, essentially, if they have one color team, or if their team is, like, a bunch of Siege Rhinos and Tassigers, you can just name black and get through. So, I mean, I think that's a big addition to the Heroic deck there. Two triggers of Heroic, two protection spells. I feel like that's going to make the deck a lot bigger of a contender moving forward.
Yeah, and that is the one Dragons of Tarkir card in this list right now. I think it's very good. That's two targets too, right, for one of those Heroic creatures.
Correct.
Yeah. All right, going on to the second one, we've got the Abzan Aggro list. And looking through a lot of these decks, I'll give you a little bit of a spoiler here. The biggest impact that green white got with Dragons of Tarkir was Jirmoka's Command is in the main deck and sideboard of a lot of these. as a 2 and 3 of in the main deck, and then a 1 or 2 in the sideboard. And that is the case for this one as well. Pretty standard list. I don't know, have you guys had any chance to experiment with this particular type of Abzan deck? I haven't done the aggro myself, but I have built the mid-range and run that a couple FNMs.
Yeah, I used to run the mid-range, and I love running 4 Abzan Charm. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but Dromoka's Command is 1 colored mana less, so that's already a benefit. I'm just curious how people are using it, you know, like target player sacks and enchantment. How relevant is that?
So it's very relevant, and I think right now it's mostly a supplement to these lists, because you'll see like there's 1 or 2 of in a lot of these green-white lists, but like the ability to have an answer for whether it be Outpost Siege or a Courser or, you know, any of those kind of cards in a card that's already very, very playable, not to mention the aspect that, you know, gives you extra removal. It pumps your guy. Like, all those things are very relevant in this format. I got to see a good share of it this weekend, and I was impressed by what I saw, but I had already playtested a lot and saw it there too. And I think this card will become more of a 3 and 4 of when these lists get ironed out a little better. And not to keep going on a tangent here, but like the lists from this open in particular, as opposed to even the Invitational, I think had probably more change than I've ever seen in a standard open with a fresh format like this. Like, we saw like a lot of change with Fate Reforged and a lot of cards getting used, but as you kind of go down the list here and you get past like that Abzan aggro list is pretty stock, but as you go farther down the list, there's a lot of really cool cards that people are trying out. I don't know if Brandon, Shuming, did you guys have a chance to take a look at some of these?
Yeah,
go ahead, Shuming.
All right, I'll take it. John, I think you're absolutely correct about Dromoka's Command. The card is just on the surface, it's so versatile, and the enchantment removal, honestly, I think is just frosting, because without it, I think the card would be fully playable. And it's shocking to me that these decks are actually playing it as a 2-of in the main board, because I absolutely think it should be a 3 or 4-of. There are certain decks, let's say you play against an Ascendancy deck, and you have one of these in the main board, and you just absolutely blow them out of the water.
Yeah, really quickly, guys, this one's got 4 modes, so let's just recap it fast. It's prevent all damage an instant or sorcery would deal this turn, target player sacrifices an enchantment, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature, and then target creature you control fights, target creature you don't control. So most relevant use of that first mode, I mean, that's going to stop, obviously it's going to stop all the burn to the face, but is there any other, you know, like maybe less obvious application of that one?
I think the fight and the counter mode are the most common uses for it. That's what I traditionally have seen almost every time. The enchantment thing is just kind of like icing on the cake, because it gives it a dimension that those decks typically didn't have before. Like, the Abzan decks are not usually running a lot of main deck enchantment hate, and now they just have it in a card that they want to use anyways. But I think the Abzan list in particular, one of the reasons that you're not seeing 4 of right now is because they're running Abzan Charm. So this is kind of like Abzan Charm 3 and 4. But at the same time, like, any deck that's not Abzan but has green-white will probably want to run 3 or 4.
Okay. This one actually has just the 2 Abzan Charms in it, the Abzan aggro list we're looking at in second place.
Right. So that's like Abzan Charm 1 and 2, and then Dromoka's Command are like Abzan Charm 3 and 4. But they're just cutting the curve down. They're giving themselves a little more flexibility.
And here's the—I mean, like, I see how that utility is really good with Dromoka's Command. It seems a lot like if you're using it for the +1/+1 counter in the fight, is Setessan Tactics not better?
I mean, is Setessan Tactics is not better, because to play Setessan Tactics, I'm pretty sure you have to tap your guys, whereas you just get to fight a guy.
Oh, right, I see.
And then the flexibility of just, like, fight you with my Siege Rhino, Edict you for your, like, Outpost Siege, or Edict you for your Citadel Siege, is just, you're going to get a 2-for-1 out of this if you do that. +1/+1 counter is not actually worth a card, I would say. So, like, +1/+1, fight a guy, you're just going 1-for-1, but you're pumping your guy, so it's fine. And then very rarely, I think, will you do anything with the prevent all damage from an instant or sorcery this turn. Things that actually will be relevant to that, you counter Roast. You counter any sort of pyroclasm effect.
Yeah.
Because you'll counter all the damage it does, not just damage to you. So anything like Anger of the Gods, Dromoka's Command counters that straight up. And then you'll get another card out of it, like Sacred
Champion. Going along that going along that, Daryl, the card is just a 2-for-1 almost every time that you play it. And it, that's a, what else could you ask for in a 2-mana instant speed green white card?
Yeah, yeah.
So why not play 4?
That's the question. I'm looking at these lists, and very few of them are playing 4 in the main board, and I think that's incorrect. I think they should absolutely be playing 4.
I think in the case of Abzan, it's just because you have so many cards, and the slots are hard to find room for. Like, you still want Abzan Charm because of the ability to exile creatures, especially bigger creatures, and also drawing cards is part of the gas of that deck. But I think, like, a deck that's just, like, straight green-white beats, like, I can't see not running 4 of that card.
I feel like you don't play 4 of it because it's a conditional 2-for-1. Like, you're only getting the 2-for-1 if they have a creature to fight. Right. If they don't have a creature to fight, like, if it's just, like, a control deck that's playing Anger of the Gods, like a Jeskai control deck, you're countering their Anger of the Gods, and then they have to have an enchantment, or you get nothing out of it. Or they have to have a creature, or you get nothing out of it. Because then, like, a +1/+1 counter is not worth a card.
Right. That enchantment removal is pretty key in a lot of situations, and that helps you free up some spots in your sideboard as well if you have those main deck already.
So I want to draw your guys' attention here to the next deck, because I know we were going to talk about it anyways, but I think this deck is one of the more important ones of both tournaments here. So you'll notice that the third and fourth place finishers both have red-green, even though they're labeled differently. They're actually the exact same deck. I think I might even be the entire same 75. They're also the same 75 as Ross Merriam's list that top-8ed the Invitational. So clearly these guys are probably working together because there's virtually no difference between their lists. And I actually played a list that was within like 4 cards of this on Friday at FNM. So I think it's pretty interesting. I'll give you guys a second to look over it. But really, I think the feature card of this, you'll see there's 4 Thunderbreak Regent and 3 Serac the Hunt Caller in it.
Mm-hmm.
All 4+4. Actually, 5+4=9. That's 1/8. Oh. Dragon's going to have haste.
Right.
Draconic Roar seems really, really sweet.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're running that. I really didn't think that was a card that was going to see a ton of play this weekend, and then to see it in all of those lists as a 2-of, I'm kind of curious how it did for them.
It's got, you know, it's like lightning strike to a creature with upside, right? So it's not too bad if you have to just hit a creature for 3. But notice that this one does say you have to reveal a dragon from your hand, whereas the others, a lot of them have the option to, you know, if you have a dragon in play, I believe, was that big blue draw spell does that?
Which one are you talking about? Because I think the whole cycle is reveal a dragon from hand.
Draconic Roar. It's, you may reveal a dragon from your hand. You have to have a dragon in your hand. It's not
right, but Corey, which one are you talking about that you don't have to?
What was Brandon's?
Dragon Lord's Prerogative.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm pretty sure that's hand too, but maybe I'm wrong.
It is hand. They are all either reveal from hand or if you control a dragon.
Right, but Draconic Roar is not like that. Draconic Roar is hand only.
No, it's says.
Nope, if you revealed a dragon card or controlled a dragon as you can. I did not see the second part of that card. I've been playing it for weeks, but. Yeah, that's interesting. Wow, that makes
it's
a lot
like
more
it's like a Searing Blood +1 damage to a dude.
It's super Searing Blood that's also colorless and red, so what else could you ask for?
I see.
I mentioned this in my other cast, too, but Frank Karsten, are you guys familiar with him?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a pro who does a lot of math. This guy, you know, I think went to school for math and whatnot, and he did all the probabilities for these dragon cards, and he isolated it down to... basically, you have to have 9 dragons in your deck in order to reveal this card on turn 2 or 3 and be able to get the bonus.
Hmm. Okay. And he's got 8. So he's
close. So he's 1 under, but he's pretty close to the threshold. But I think Serac is really powerful. When I was playtesting, the 2 cards that really stuck out to me were the Regent and Serac. And they seemed really good on Friday when I was playing this kind of list, but... I think the big distinct change these guys made over what I was playing that probably makes it all flesh together here is that he's got 4 Rattleclaw Mystic and 4 Elvish Mystic. So it just really seems like it can get to the top of this list very quickly and reliably.
Yeah, I think that, to tag on to that, Rattleclaw Mystic is actually a very important difference over what you've been seeing from a lot of decks, which is playing Sylvan Caryatid. Because being able to have a 2/2 when you don't need a mana dork is actually a big upside.
Yep. All right, let's look on to the next one here. We've got the Green-White Devotion deck in 5th place, which is pretty similar to the Green-White Devotion deck we had just before the rotation. or just before the new set came in, and this one in the open results, at least, has just one Death Mist Raptor, and I don't know if that's an availability thing, or just like he wasn't so sure about the card at the time, but that card seems to slot pretty perfectly into this deck, with the two green mana symbols in it, and then all the, you know, the Megamorph and Morph tech that it's got built in. But it's also got a Den Protector, one Den Protector in there, too.
I'm kind of surprised to only see one Death Mist Raptor. What do you guys think about this?
I think Death Mist Raptor is, like, a really cool toolbox card to have, but he's not really a powerhouse, so I can understand having one of.
Yep.
I'm actually surprised. Like, one Death Mist Raptor is good because, like, when you get it online, it's fine. So, like, it will always be online. I like the Den Protector, and I feel like there might be some market for more of them. Just because when you Megamorph it, it's a 3-2 attacker, the Eternal Witnesses. Even though that's 5 mana over 2 turns, like, that's still a pretty good value for your Eternal Witness.
Yeah, I mean, the ability at that point, you know, by the time that you're paying 5 mana to flip it over and attack with the 2-1, there's going to be something that can block it, no problem, right? It's almost like that creatures with power less than Den Protector's power can't block it clause is most useful when you are playing it for 2, right?
I mean, this guy looks like the Mirror Breaker to me here. He just looks like a card that you want to pump up. I'm trying to look and see what other cards they have to make him bigger. But I feel like that's what he's in there for. He's like another Teamer Sabretooth.
Yeah, there's only the Soul of Theros to pump him up.
Yeah, they left out the potential of playing Nihilea, God of the Hunt to pump that up, so.
But he is like a Eternal Witness, like you guys are saying. I mean, that's pretty valuable, I feel like, in a deck like this, because there's a lot of key one-ofs that kind of break through these stalls that it inevitably always gets into. And I don't know how many times you guys have played against this deck, but it's pretty scary how fast this thing comes out. Like, I definitely think it's still arguably in the top 3 best decks in Standard. And for some reason, it's just not seeing the numbers it did that first week that it was out.
All right, so looking at the next deck, number 6 is Jeskai Tokens. Pretty similar to what we had before the set, just as the last one was. And this one has 3 Anticipates jammed in, which is to be expected.
Yep, it's a good slot card. It'll fill a role in those decks, but other than that, nothing exciting really there.
Yeah.
I think it's strong. I think we can just hit up the next deck now.
Yep. Sorry, John, go ahead.
I was just going to say, guys, and I think we can kind of skip the Jeskai decks because there wasn't a ton of innovation there. Like, the main difference is they've added some Anticipates, which I think is a strong difference, but basically it's just smoothing their curve out a little bit.
Yep, but Anticipates.
The 8th and 9th place lists are kind of like the 3rd and 4th place lists, where they're very similar. Basically, you'll notice it's basically red deck wins, except they've added a Tarkus command, which was something that I think even you guys had maybe mentioned last time, whether it was worth adding or not. But it's clearly, it's something that's popular, because I saw it in some other results. And then also they added Dragon Fodder as well as Scorching Outburst. Mm-hmm. So they're playing off that pump. Yeah, I think it is, because they're playing off that, you know, pump your whole team kind of feature of a Tarkus command. Not to mention you have a Skullcrack for Siege Rhino. So I didn't get a chance to test this out. It was one of the decks that I wanted to try out prior to Saturday. But it looks like it's a thing, because I saw it in the Invitational. I believe they had some lists, and then also here, too.
Well, that and the Foundry Street Denizen, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and Foundry Street. I mean, that kind of stuff was in the mono red list already. So this one basically said, we're going to cut Searing Blood, and we're going to cut, Mardu Scout. So they're going to cut some of the marginal cards from mono red, and they're basically just going to fill them in with these green cards, with the only big, you know, detractor being that you'll notice they're running 4 mana Confluence and 4 fetch lands. So it's a lot of pain they're taking out of their lands.
So this eighth place deck, and I just stepped away for a second, so forgive me if you already said this, there are the 2 Lightning Berserkers in here as well. You talked about that?
So that card is arguably my favorite red card of the entire set, but I think that it's kind of a gamble here with the way the lands are so punishing. Like, I could still see it being good in this style of the list, but they're certainly taxing their mana by playing that card here.
Yeah. Did the ninth place have that as well? see how I pull that up.
Looks like he didn't. So it looks like he kind of made the smart choice. It's too bad because, like, you'd want it in the style list since it's so good. I mean, it's always just constantly fireballing your opponent for five or forcing them to block with their best creature and losing it. Like, it's just been one of the better additions to red deck wins in a while, I think.
Yeah, the ninth place version of the deck doesn't have the Rabble Masters in it either, and instead it's got the Heel Cutter, the Goblin Heel Cutter.
And he's got Scout in this one too, it looks like. So that's kind of what replaced Rabble Master in this list.
So. Yeah, I think this is more the list I'd want to run. I think that the red deck that says target creature can't block, just has potential to really really blow out the opponent. Rabble Master in that sort of list. It's almost like, I mean, it's slowing you down quite a bit. That's turn three that you're going to get a 1-1 attacking versus turn three you're going to get a 3-2 that's coming in and making a creature not able to block.
Rebel Master's just not very good in this format right now. There's just too much removal, too many good blockers. I actually didn't run any this weekend in my red list, but I'll talk about that later. But I think he's just kind of being moved out. You'll notice if you look at any of those mono red lists too, most of them either foregoed Rebel Master or just had him as a one or two of. And I think it's just because people realize, like, every time they play that card, it's either dying or getting stonewalled. And those times where it just takes over the game by itself of kind of disappearing.
Yeah.
But I want to get to two lists on this here. I know we got to move on to the next segment, but there's two really interesting lists I think we should talk about for a sec. If you guys look down, it's the 21st and 22nd finishers here. You'll see there's a mono blue devotion list and a Naya midrange list, and they are both bananas. I don't know if any of you guys had a chance to look over that, but pull up the links now. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, the 21st with the Ornithopters in it.
And Insole Artifact.
Yeah, holy cow. All right, so this one's got the four Shorecrasher Elemental, which we were pretty down on last week. But this is basically what you'd expect to see in a mono blue devotion deck. But then it's running. So Ornithopter and Soul Artifact is the secret tech that they've got going. Where else can they put that?
They've anticipated it too.
Said it all. Okay, right.
But I'm not a fan of that because you need to hit your triple blue for the your elemental.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I remember that when this deck was kind of picking up some steam, or that whole tech, the Darksteel Citadel and Insole Artifact was picking up steam in the standard with where Return to Ravnica was present. And Selesnya Charm exiled the 5/5 right away, but right now there's not a thing that can do that, is there?
There's Abzan Charm.
Okay, yeah. Abzan Charm, all right. One more mana, though, so they can be beaten in for 5 for one more turn.
And I don't think the mana, Brandon, is too much of a trouble here. It certainly is a cost to have the Citadels in there. But, like, the old, you know, mono blue list played Nykthos. So, basically, that's what the slot that it's taking. It's kind of interesting there's only 8 targets here for Insole Artifact. But, I mean, it's, as anybody knows who's played Modern Affinity, it's a pretty powerful card. Certainly a powerful card for Standard. And it looks like they've kind of fixed some of the, like, bad draws they might have because they're running for Anticipate, which I was surprised to see. I haven't seen that in any mono blue lists.
Yeah. This one's also got, kind of interesting to note, the Silumgar Sorcerer looks pretty sweet. The 3-mana flash negate. Or no, it's not a negate. It's a counter-target creature spell. Exploit card.
Good way to trade in your Ornithopters.
Right on, yeah. Two pips on there. Two blue mana symbols on that one. All right, so let's look real quickly at the invitational list. There's not a whole lot of innovation going on here, as much as the open. Maybe people were kind of more trying to stick to the tried and true method with the Vigor event. But we've got an Abzan control list in first, Sultai Reanimator in second, Abzan Aggro in third, Green White Devotion in fourth, Mono Red Aggro in fifth, Jeskai Tokens in sixth, Abzan control again in seventh, and Red Green Aggro, which is identical to the decks that we talked about, in eighth there. Looking through all those deck lists, I did a little bit of a, I kind of compiled all the Dragons of Tarkir cards that appeared, and in both of the first two decks had Sidisi in them, the mono black exploit Sidisi, and there were two in the first list and four in the second list, and that Sultai Reanimator.
The Black Tutor is really good.
Yeah, yep. It is. And four it's a 4/6 death touch, like, on top of that, so that trades pretty profitably with any ground beater in the format. Dromoka's Command showed up a lot in this one. There are 4 Deathmist Raptors in the Green White Devotion deck. This guy was not afraid to try that. And then the mono red aggro deck has four of the Lightning Berserker, which John's a big fan of, and Zergo has shown up quite a bit in those lists as well.
Going forward too. That mono red aggro is probably like my ideal list right there. I think the guy made a ton of good choices. Like Outpost Siege, we know is a powerful card. He put it in the sideboard because basically this says anybody who plays against this deck game one is not going to see a single enchantment. They're not going to expect an enchantment. So then when they try to go for removal game two, you can go bigger with the Outpost Siege. They're not going to have as many answers, if any, for it. And basically this deck with Outpost Siege is just insane. Like you're always drawing multiple removal spells a turn, or multiple burn spells for their face. So I think he employed a really smart strategy here that I didn't think of going into the tournament on Saturday. And he also moved his Eidolons to the main because there's really no other aggro threat other than the mirror.
Yeah. Interesting to note that in both tournaments, there is not one Narset in main deck or sideboard in either of the top eights. So that was a little surprising to me, but the decks that are returning from last season are doing some very subtle innovations at this point, and maybe we'll kind of take more chances as we go on and develop more as the set gets figured out better.
Yep, your Narset-based decks have to have a few weeks of information before they can try and build to control the format, so you're not going to see Narset for, like, the first month.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. So.
And overall, there's just a lack of control in this tournament as well.
Yeah.
But that
control!
That always happens, like, the first week of the new format.
Right, everyone just wants to burn each other's faces off, of course.
Right. So, all right, John, did you want to talk a little bit about the your experience with PPTQ last weekend?
Sure. Yeah, so I lost my winning in. I had a bye the first round, so it was already a strange tournament starting off. And I played mono red aggro, obviously. Pretty similar to what we just talked about. Except a little bit less one drops. I still had Mardu Scout and my Eidolons on the board. And it was at Mox Mania in Madison was where this PPTQ was. So the LGS owner, who's a really nice guy, he didn't really advertise the tournament too much. He wanted to try to keep it to locals. So it ended up only being 27 people in five rounds, which was good to see off the bat. Round two, I played a Morph deck from a guy who is actually a pretty respectable player who I've known for a long time and kind of brews up with Brian Cowell, a somewhat famous pro, some of you might know. They brewed up this Morph deck, mostly his creation, and it was using the new 2-mana rare that you can play all your Morphs for one less, and it can turn into a Morph itself. So that was pretty interesting. I ended up losing to that deck. It was really close games, but it was a bananas deck. Like all the Death Mist Raptors, all the Ire Shamans, all those type of guys in it. And then I beat Abzan, and I can't even remember what the other deck was, and then lost to Abzan in the final round. So
Abzan control mid range aggro.
Yeah, Abzan mid-range. So beat it once, lost it once. Game two, like, I had one land on a six-card draw and didn't feel like going down, never saw a second land, so.
Okay. Did you see a lot of that there? A lot of Abzan? Yeah.
Abzan was, like, at least four or five decks in the 27. Mono Red was at least four or five decks. The rest were kind of a smattering, but there was, like, Jeskai, Heroic, and there was Green-White Devotion, that sort of stuff. But it was mostly Abzan and Mono Red.
All right. Cool. We're going to switch gears to Legacy here, and I'm going to actually hand this one off to Xu Ming, as I am a total Legacy idiot and have little to add to that conversation. So, Xu Ming, take it away.
All right. Thanks, Corey. So, let's take a look at the tournament report for the Star City Games Super IQ post-Treasure Cruise. Definitely looks like the meta is back to where it was before all the Treasure Cruise shenanigans came and messed everything up. We have seven different lists in the top eight. Starting with Reanimator taking first, followed by Tom Ross playing Infect, then two Miracles lists, Death and Taxes Elves, Jeskai Delver, and Shardless Sultai. Not much to see here, pretty standard, except for the third list. We have Mr. Sean French playing Miracles with 21 lands, a mainboard Karanos, and a sideboard Karn Liberated. So what do you have to say about that, Daryl?
I mean, I really like Karanos. Karanos is very good in this deck. I'm willing to try it over some number of Jace. If he cut a Jace, I think that's probably correct. If he didn't and cut, like, another card, then that's probably not correct. So he's playing three Jace. It didn't look like he cut one. That Karn cannot possibly be correct. That Karn is just not even close to what I want. I mean, I understand he's playing Predictor Times to try and, like, dig up his Karn and then, like, play it on seven when he's, like, the games went long. But he has, like, one extra cantrip, and he's playing, like, less fetch lands, or about the same number of fetch lands. So he's playing less cantrips and 21 lands, and he's trying to play a 7-drop. I think he will not resolve that very many times.
Do you think that was, like, a hedge, Daryl, for, like, you know, like a metagame call or something? Or why would he consider that option?
I think it's just, like, if you expect the tournament to just go big and be, like, a bunch of mid-range decks like Maverick and things like that, you just go Karn plus four it, here's a 10 loyalty Planeswalker. But if I'm really in the market to go bigger than my opponent, I would just go one mana higher and play Ugin. Because then I could just kill their board and bolt them to death. So I'm not a fan of Karn. If we're going to play a large one, I would play
very respectable in the Miracle Mirror match, I do think.
I think that beats Miracles in the Mirror match, yes. You cannot counterbalance that one.
So I assume that's kind of what it is there for.
Right. Mr. French came into this thinking, I'm going to play Miracles all day long, and I'm going to board and card, and I'm going to go, wee, and win every game. But other than Miracles, I can't see him bringing it in against anything or resolving it against anything. It just seems absolutely absurd. Like, looking at this top eight, he's not resolving that card against any of these decks except for the other Miracle player.
I mean, then again, though, look at his sideboard. I mean, I don't know, Daryl, you can tell me if this is atypical or not, but he's got a lot of one-ofs. And I know Miracles runs their share of one-ofs, but, I mean, like, his entire board is one-ofs except for two 2-ofs. Like, yeah. Do you think he was just playing the, I'm going to have access to basically any kind of trump card I want and hopefully cantrip my way until I get to it?
I mean, that's something you get to do with the luxury of Legacy with, you know, Ponder for your name of your choice plus Brainstorm plus Top. You usually have enough sifting that you can find whatever one of, plus you're playing 2 Dictor Times. So, like, all of that combined, I'm going to find a one of. I'm going to look at 7 cards and I'm going to go, ooh, the Baneslayer Angel. And it is a Staticaster. And my Death and Taxes opponent is never going to win a game because I'm going to play as a Staticaster, kill all their X1s, and then lock them out of the game with Baneslayer Angel.
Right. Hold on. Before we cover this next deck, I have, like, a really, really deep theory on this, all right? So, Shuming, you said that the metagame is as you expect it. And I would actually argue that I would expect to see way more combo decks, because combo kind of hit the curb once Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time came into the format, because the format kind of slowed down for everybody to get to cast their cruises and their digs. Well, combo died off, and now that the card draw is less prevalent, there's no more Treasure Cruises, you would expect more combo like Show and Tell. And so maybe that Karn is in there as an extra hedge against Show and Tell.
Brandon, you can't put in a Karn off Show and Tell?
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's everything but Planeswalker.
Show and Tell was way before Planeswalkers were printed.
All right, well, my theory's botched.
I think we all just got trolled, or I don't know. Was that a troll?
No, that was pretty... just Brandon just, oh,
not
man.
Not knowing.
I wanted to help out Sean.
John, do you want to talk about the Infect deck?
I do, but one last point on Miracles real quick. Daryl, I noticed both third and fourth place are running Jace. You kind of touched on that briefly, but I know you don't normally run Jace, right? What's the theory behind running him?
So it's only stylistically what Miracles decks are playing that you don't want Jace. Like, in these regular old Miracles decks that are, like, trying to rest in peace combo, they're not trying to do anything fancy. Jace is a perfectly fine and wonderful card. And it'll win a lot of games. So I think that, especially since both of these guys are just playing the stylistic approach of, we're going to play some Snapcasters and some Red Blast, and we're going to dig through time our way through the game. Like, you'll dig through time and find your Jace and be able to brainstorm and put back your retreat and kill them. That's completely fine. If you're going to play, like, that the Rest in Peace version of Miracles, Jace is really bad because it just dies even when you have Energy Field in play. So you'd rather have a win condition like Karanos. So that's sort of the difference there. It's like Jace is completely good in all those versions of Miracles you're playing. If you want to play Rest in Peace because you think it's going to be like Sultai Delver heavy field, or you're going to see a lot of dredge and stuff like that, then you'll want to take your Jaces out and put Piranhas in.
That makes sense. It's kind of like it's like you said, very much a play style. It seems like would be the choice for it.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to touch on. Sorry, go ahead, Shuming.
Oh, it's just capitalizing off Daryl's point where if you play an energy field Rest in Peace version, it's very hard to protect Jace. You literally have nothing, and he's only good in the control matchup, so that's another reason that players like myself have cut Jace from their builds. But yeah, go ahead and talk about the infect build.
Well, yeah, he's just going to ruin your energy field, basically.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So I'm curious about the infect build more for Tom Ross than infect. Like, this guy's like a pseudo hero of mine because he's just like the mono red champion at this point. But I'm kind of curious, do you guys think, I don't even want to say this, but do you guys think that he might be cheating?
No.
Like, he's just winning way too many tournaments right now. Like, he is always up there. Like, I'm just curious, but like, he's beat, like, you saw what he did at the Pro Tour. I don't know if you guys followed that, but like, he basically took over one of the best pro teams that were out there and single-handedly got them all on his infect deck. Like, is he just have like the crazy player element that he just knows the in and outs of everything he's doing, or what's the story there?
John, I don't think he's cheating. I think you're giving him less credit than he deserves. Like, when you have somebody specialize in a deck like this, you see that there's only one copy of this in the tournament report. When you specialize in a deck like this, it's very hard to play against. I know a lot of people just have a very, very hard time playing against Blue-Green Infect because not a lot of people play it. And when you have someone playing it as well as Tom Ross, it can be very, very hard to play against. You don't know what to counter. You don't know what to kill. What is your take on it, Daryl?
I think that Tom Ross is a masterful player of this deck. I've watched Tom Ross play games. I've watched Tom Ross play games on camera where he's drawn just absolute garbage. If he's cheating with his deck and intentionally losing games on camera by drawing absolute garbage, then he's the smartest human being in the face of the earth, and I'm never going to be smarter than Tom Ross, so I'm just going to bow down to him now. But, like, if you look at this deck list, like, let's skip past the infect creatures, the 12 infect creatures, and the 4 noble hunters. Those are all obvious. But let's look at these lists. One Wasteland in your tempo deck. One Pendlehaven makes sense. One Become Immense because the card's bonkers, but I don't want a bunch of them. Two of what I think is one of the better cards in the deck, Berserk, which you see him cast more often as a removal spell for his opponent's creature than you see him cast as a kill condition. But you're playing four Inkwell Thexus and you only want one crop rotation. But you have one Stifle. You have one Ponder. Like, the sideboard. There's a Necropede. Why was that the last infect creature? Why not a Nickerclaw Mirror, or the one that's like a, if it gets blocked, it gets +3/+3. Like,
and that, I mean that speaks like this, to skill
the choices.
Level too.
Like, yeah. The choices of these cards, like, how did we get to two Swords to Plowshares? How did we figure out that these two white sources are enough? Like, I think that the man just knows the deck well enough that you just let him play.
I'm glad to hear you guys say that. Like, I'll see the same thing as you, Daryl. Like, I've seen him on camera, like, playing complete garbage. And, like, he just knows how to pull himself out of these situations that look unreal. And, like, I picked up some of his mono-red lists, like, on the fly and tried to play them. And I consider myself, like, a decent mono-red player. And I'll just, like, get stone crushed with some of his lists. Like, I just feel like he knows exactly what he's doing.
I do want to hit on something that is kind of entertaining. And I'll kind of kick it over to Brandon on his opinion of it. This is going to be really short for me. I think that the lens players are missing out on the neat stylistic interaction point that now that they've printed Haven of the Spirit Dragon, if you need a trump card in certain matchups, you can Ugin your opponents out of the game by dredging the Planeswalker, playing Haven of the Spirit Dragon, and blowing them out of the water.
I don't know. I feel like I'd rather just pay 6 mana for a Primeval Titan.
That's fair. I just was like, if you need, like, a board wipe stylistically, like,
yeah,
you have...
It's certainly stylistic.
You have this in your bag.
Yeah. No, I'm just surprised to not see more lands doing better right now. I mean...
Brendan, yeah. On that point, I was going to talk about how lands has consistently had a 65% win rate in the past couple of months. the deck is insane. Many people said that, oh, the deck is only good because of Treasure Cruise right now and because people are playing Blue-Red – Blue-Red Delver. But the deck has consistently seen a 65% win rate. And you don't think that's good? Like, it's piloted by very skilled individuals, and it's a very hard game – it's a very hard deck to play against because not many people get to play against it very much.
And so it costs a lot of money. So
yeah,
if you want to get into
money,
it, then
that's the barrier right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that Tyranact will cost a lot of money.
There's a reason there's people not playing lands.
If you look at this IQ, 10th, 15th,
just,
19th for lands, just all on the outside of the top.
And Brandon, like, it's you don't see it in the first and second place slots a lot because, honestly, not a lot of people are playing it, but the people that do play it are very proficient and very good at it, which is why it wins, and just wins.
Yeah, it has a high rate of convergence, they say, which is, you know, you take the ratio of the number of people who are in the top eight or high placing compared to the amount of people who played with it in the tournament, and normally that ratio is going to be really high compared to something like in standard Abzan mid-range or Abzan control. I think this is all very similar to the Infect effect. There's just not a whole lot of people running this deck, mm-hmm. so not a whole lot of people know how to play it, and the people who do play it are basically married to it because they just spent about $500 to $600 on a Tabernacle.
Hey, I got a quick question for you. I'm going to interject here for a second. I'm looking at number 10. The 10th place lands deck is Micah Greenbaum. There is one forest in the deck, and it happens to be a snow-covered forest. Is there any particular reason for that?
Just got to keep your opponent off balance.
Exactly. That's right.
I used to do that with Burn,
looking for
too.
That scrying sheets.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I have one last thing before we close the Legacy segment. I'd like to talk about the 31st place deck, Grixis Control. This deck was popularized by Eli Cassis. He called it Thieves, I believe. What do you guys think about this style of Grixis Control deck, and do you guys think it has a place in the meta, or is it just something that is too cute to really survive in Legacy?
Oh, it's got a DAC in it?
Yeah, super props.
The idea of this deck is to, you know, stabilize the board and then play your young pyromancers and just make infinity power with all your cheap little cantrips while ripping their hand apart.
Yeah, it's a more concentrated version of that four-color Delver list Eric Rill was running around with.
Yeah, I mean, when it works, but when it doesn't, it's got to be the most miserable deck to play in the history of ever. Exactly. When you draw, like, Dig Through Time, Force of Will, Baleful Strix, like, Dak Faden, a couple lands, you're just like, why am I playing this deck? But then when you draw like Young Pyromancer, Brainstorm, Thought Scour, a couple lands, you're like, all right, I'm a genius. So
absolutely. Definitely a very draw-dependent deck.
Yeah, you really need that Young Pyromancer.
Speaking of why do you want to play this, and not to backtrack here, but Brandon, like you were talking about lands, why it's not popular. I wonder if it's just the play style, too, in addition to the cost factor, that like maybe people just don't like playing a deck where they don't have like active permanence on the board, or that they have to be, you know, taking like a very set line with their deck. Do you think that could be a factor of it?
I don't think lands is a set line at all. I think it can just pivot on a point. You know, it can combo your opponent out, or it can just play the I'm going to grind your lands down game. In addition to the slow burn with Punishing Fire, I see it as a very grindy deck, but if you look at Standard right now and see all the Abzan decks that are very grindy, I really don't see a difference in play style there. So I really think it's a monetary barrier.
All right, really quick before we leave Legacy, let's just, since we're down here in the 30th and stuff, there's a 26th place deck, an Esper Deathblade deck with one Myth Realized in it. I think we'd have to ask Christopher Johnson, who piloted this one, how he thought about that or how he felt about that after the tournament, but to me, that looks like an experiment.
You'll be our guest next week.
There you go. Cool.
It's fine. I think it picks up a Jimmy fine. Bash call, not so good.
I think it's terrible. He should have just played a Psionic Blast and called it a day instead.
All right. Let's get out of Legacy. We're losing it. We've made it to Psionic Blast.
All right. Really fast, then. Let's talk Modern for just a second here. Looking through the Modern list, there were actually a couple of Dragons cards in Modern this week, and there were two Anticipates in a Jeskai Control deck that took 5th place. But what I really want to look at is the 8th place Zoo deck in the Modern Open that had 3 Collected Company in it. And that is the 4-mana instant that searches out 2 CMC 3 or less creatures and puts them into play.
I think it's top 7. Top 6 or 7.
It's top 6.
Yeah, top six, pick 2, 3 or less CMCs, put them in the play.
What are we talking about here, guys? I'm sorry.
Collected Company out of the
East. Oh, yeah, that card looked really strong. Just like a standard card, I'm surprised it's in Modern. Which, is it in the 8th place zoo list here?
Correct. Yeah, yeah. 8th place zoo list has 27 creatures, Knight of the Reliquary, Loxodon Smiter, Noble Hierarch, Kasali Primage, Scavenging Ooze, Tarmogoyf, and Wild Nakato, all targets for that, and there are 4 of each of those guys, except for the Ooze.
And the other thing to remember about this card is that it's an instant, too. So we're talking basically an instant speed Alurin in a zoo deck. Which seems dumb good to me.
I feel like our zoo player made a slight mistake. He's playing Collected Company, and he neglected to put Mages to the Moon in his Collected Company deck.
Ooh, that would be cool.
Because I feel like end of turn instant speed Blood Moons, after your opponent does things on their turn, are very good. Because you're just going to, like, play a Collected Company, and you hit, like, a Mages to the Moon and a 7/7 Knight of the Reliquary. And your opponent has a Siege Rhino, and they're not.
Doesn't that just, like, hose... I mean, I understand the line you're talking about, where, like, you get ahead and then lock the game up, but, like, otherwise, doesn't that just destroy his deck completely? Like, he's playing all green and white creatures here. I don't think the mana could probably work for that.
I mean, he's playing 3 Blood Moons in the sideboard already.
Yeah, he already has 3 Blood Moons in his board.
I didn't see the Blood Moons there. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think by the time he can cast Collected Company, he already has Knight of the Reliquary and Noble Hierarch for mana fixing end of it.
Right. True. I think that's a really valid point, Daryl, and I think that if you saw Jeff in person, you would definitely suggest that to him, because that seems insane.
Well, I wonder if, like, maybe it was just, like, he was too worried that it was going to get removed or something like that. But
I mean, Lightning Bolt's the only thing that kills it if they don't fetch basic, because you just, like, play a Noble Hierarch on turn one, turn two, you play a guy, and then turn three, Collected Company, a Blood Moon, and a Tarmogoyf. Go. And your opponent's like, oh, a Blood Moon. And if they don't have a basic or a fetch land to get one, then your Blood Moon lives forever. And if not...
Yeah, I mean, same scenario then. I think I'm just super happy to see this list because, like, Zoo has been absent for quite a while, and I saw it kind of upticking on MTGO, and this list looks pretty good. Like, I feel like there's room for improvement here, but I think you can see in this top 32 or top 16 that there's... you know, very little burn, and that's kind of the deck I think that's hated out Zoo, and it's good to see it kind of on the rise again here.
I mean, when you're looking at Collected Company in Modern, you can get all kinds of tricky things. You can get, if you're losing Life Total, Death Shadow, you could be on Geist of St. Draft, you could create Vendillion Clicks. Like, there are a lot of cards that I've seen in these Collected Company in Modern that could just be very interesting.
But don't take this as a financial suggestion. I think Collected Company is like $450 right now. I don't think it's going to go too much higher than that.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to go higher. I just think it's a very interesting, like, you could play this very interesting toolbox deck with, like, the aforementioned Blood Moon, Mage of the Moon. If you want to be aggressive, you can play Geist and Luxem Smiter. Or you can play these utility creatures like Vendillion Click and Snapcaster Mage.
And I have seen the Malira Pod combo... basically the pod deck with the Collected Companies in place of the Birthing Pod, because you can get all three pieces of that combo with the cards.
That's pretty awesome.
It's almost hard to believe that this card is not only one green, but also an instant. It just seems insane.
The instant speed's crazy, And I'm really surprised. There's two things here that really stand out to me. For one, he's playing Choke and not Combust against Twin, and then also... he has neither of the new commands in here, and I feel like those were just, like, made for Zoo and Modern. But maybe I'm wrong on that take.
He's going with the fact that his sideboard card, instead of being these, like, very loose cards that are flexible and whatnot, with Zoo, since you don't have a lot of draw power and ability to sift through your deck, you can't play these, like, reasonable one-offs that are, like, flex through situations. You just want to play these really powerful cards that crush your opponent. Like, Aetherstorm Canonist and Thalia, crush combo. Core Firewalker crushes burn, Blood Moon crushes greedy mana bases, Choke crushes blue, Stony Silence crushes affinity, Bonfire also crushes affinity, and other, like, Zoo decks. So you're just playing cards that, like, his opponent can't beat, instead of, like, marginal upgrades to cards that are in the stack.
That's fair. Like, he's staying on point. I mean, maybe it's just more so that, you know, he knows the expected meta and just wanted to tackle that with those specific cards.
Sure.
All right.
I'm done here, yeah.
Then we better move on. Well, that wraps up our tournament section, but we're going to talk a little news here. And the Tempest Cube is the next topic on our agenda, and that was announced quite a while ago, but only recently the spoiler came out. There's a full visual spoiler online, and I'll put a link in the show notes. And if you guys want to open that up and check it out, it actually looks pretty sweet. The all the cards are in new borders now. All the Tempest Block cards are in new borders. Basically, what this is they've taken the Tempest Block, which is, I don't know how many cards in the block.
Like 600? 600,
okay.
Close to 700.
And they brought it down to a 269 card set containing 101 commons, 80 uncommons, 53 rares, and then 15 of those cards were turned into mythics. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it's about a Stoneforge mystic.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I looked through the spoiler quite a bit because I saw it. And, like, they did a pretty reasonable job trying to make this a draft format. There are just, like, cards that will absolutely crush the draft format. Like, Cataclysm will absolutely crush the draft format. Humility will absolutely crush this draft format. But they did a good job trying to incorporate cards. Like, they got Humility in and Cataclysm, which are two big Legacy players. They got Intuition, Dream Halls, Wasteland, City of Traders, Survival of the Fittest, Meditate. So all these cards are just really hard to come by on Modo that you need to kind of break the barrier for entry of Legacy. When I keep scrolling through the visual spoiler and kind of hit the big ones here.
So Daryl, yeah. you know more about the online meta than I do. What kind of decks do you think people are going to be playing more of now that they have easier access to all these cards?
So Mox Diamond was an issue. Lotus Petal was kind of awkward. It was like $3 or $4 for a while, so like Lotus Petal decks are more accessible. Intuition wasn't super accessible. Neither was Humility. Those were both like $25. City of Traders is the big one. That card was, for a while, was hanging around like $80. That, and Wasteland is one of the most expensive cards on Modo. Like, a non-foil Wasteland is $110 still.
Cool.
So, even though there's like the promos that were released, so you're looking at circulating a lot more Wastelands, which is huge for the format. And then you also get kind of like, for people who like to play Vintage as well, you'll get Mana Bond out of this. You'll get Oath of Druids for the Vintage people. You'll get Recycle for Vintage as well. But you'll see some just Survival for Vintage. You'll get to see some of the very reasonable cards that just didn't make it. Because there was such a short promo that they're trying to like tuck into the format. Curse Scroll is another one that's expensive. Grindstone. These are just cards that didn't make it into a lot of printing. Mox Diamond is another popular one. Just kind of things that need to be out so that you can play them in Legacy. That since they were such a short print run, they'll not be available.
And it reminds you how many like awesome cards are in this block. It's pretty fun to look at.
Yeah, for those of you out there who didn't play when Tempest was around, I mean, this set is awesome. It was one of my favorite sets of all time. There's just, like, every archetype you could imagine that you'd want to have fun with, there's some really sweet cards for, and it's a great limited set. So if you haven't played Tempest before, I strongly suggest it, even if it requires getting an MTGO account.
Yeah, it makes me want to do it. Looking through those, it's kind of funny. You see, like, some really powerful cards, like Daryl mentioned, Wasteland and all the cards that have been turned into Mythic, all the Chase cards. There's some rares in here, like Exalted Dragon, which, like, were on par for the power level at that time, but are just, like, pretty awful. This is Exalted Dragon is a 6-mana 5/5 flyer. It can't attack unless you sacrifice a land, so.
Which, and it was it was huge back then, too.
Yeah. Right,
I mean,
right.
It just shows you how good it was. But
so
I mean,
it's
like,
still big, because like, it's a format just of those cards. So
we're
a
talking
6-mana 5/5 flyer is still gigantic. Most stretches.
Yeah, Recurring Nightmare is in here as a Mythic.
Like that's a card that would crush this.
Have you guys ever cubed and drafted that card? I mean, it's for
sticking. That card's absolutely bonkers.
Yeah.
Cormorant Druid is another one.
Yeah, the power of the control cards in blue is like pretty ridiculous. You've got like your Mana Leaks in here, and Forbid is in here.
Tradewind Rider was one of the best cards in that format too.
Like, yeah, like the blue cards, actually, that they're just trying to get into circulation are, like, the Intuition, Dream Halls, Meditate.
Counterspell.
Counterspell's
are they're trying to get into circulation.
But a bunch, yeah, like, Intuition, Meditate, and Dream Halls are the big three that are going to be, like, barriers to entry for Legacy that kind of just are like, hey, here we go. They're not $30 anymore. They're, like, $15 because they were printed in this set. And you'll notice that, like, Intuition's probably a Mythic, or Dream Halls is probably a Mythic. I can't really tell the difference between the gold and the orange, mostly because of my vision, but... I'm done here. We covered that there are like 15 relevant cards in this set.
Yeah,
there's
extra print. Like, we could go on for hours. This is all nostalgia here, but my best suggestion for you would be to just play it. It makes me want to download MTGO and do it, but I know that I know it's a drug, and I'll stay away.
If only the set was on paper. Oh, man.
I know. That's what I was thinking, too. It would be fun.
Absolutely.
All right, let's keep moving here. The next topic we've got on our list, and I'll keep it quick, is our deck tech, and we did this last week. Daryl went over his 5-color modern deck, so we figured this week we'd switch formats up, and I posted a list for a red-green bees deck that we had talked about at the end last week. And as we said, this was a Caleb Durward creation that he'd been testing for some time, I guess. Probably the last few months that he's had it, he's attended a few tournaments and placed pretty highly with it. On Channel Fireball, there are a couple articles that he wrote with updates to the deck list after those events, and there's actually a more recent one in February that I missed over, even though I'd been personally playing this deck myself and making my own modifications to it. But there are a lot of cool synergies in this, and I'll go through those really fast. Basically, this is a red-green, similar to a Monsters deck, without so many of the monsters. There's 4 Elvish Mystic, 4 Sylvan Caryatid as your mana base, and 4 Courser of Kruphix. But the hot topic of this one is the 4 Hornet Nest and 3 Setessan Tactics that are in there. So essentially, Hornet Nest is the 3-drop, 0/2, that when it's dealt damage, you put that many bees in play. Those are flying Death Touch tokens. And so when you put the Setessan Tactics on it, you fight a creature on the other side of the board and put, you know, 5 tokens into play. Then the other side of that is you can play an additional Setessan Tactics after that, targeting those bees and killing the opponent's board with your tokens because they all have Death Touch. This one's also got 4 Court of Callings in it, so you can flash in the Hornet Nest and block. And then eventually he started to add the Ashcloud Phoenix. There's Storm Breath in there, Pelucranos in there for other targets to that, and Hornet Queen for other targets to that. Because once you've got an army of bees on the board, your Convoke cost can be much higher. And so I posted that list. I'll put it in the show notes, and you can see there aren't any Fate Reforged or Dragons of Tarkir cards in there yet. And looking through Fate Reforged, there wasn't too much that really slotted in there, with the exception of Whisperwood Elemental, which I might try. I think that seems like a good fit, and I might switch out one of the, I think the Nissa in the main deck with one of those guys. But okay. I want to hear your thoughts on how this deck might be updated with the new set as well.
Corey, I'm gonna grill you. I don't know, we're getting some back feed here, but I'm going to grill you for a second here on this list. Yep. It's always kind of intrigued me. It's a cool list. It's got bees. I don't think anybody can hate on the flavor of this deck. And the Court of Calling is great for tutoring up stuff. But what do you think the game plan is against control here? Because you do have a lot of cards that are, like, pseudo-dead. And that was something that, like, Caleb touches briefly on in his articles, but he doesn't really go fully into.
Right on. Yeah, no, that's a fair question. And like I said, I've been running this deck for quite a while, and to some success myself, too. Caleb's point that he made in his article was that just like any other deck in Standard, there are going to be some dead cards against Control where you don't have many creatures to interact with. And so you imagine those Hornet Nests, he said, specifically to be kind of like your Drowning Sorrows and Bio Blights in the other decks. So post-board, you're much better off, right? You can put in the Planeswalkers and the extra big creatures. And basically, my plan for it was always to side out the combo, obviously, the Hornet's Nest and the Setessan Tactics, and put in as many, like, big threats as I could, which is almost always the plan against Control, right? But this deck, while you have all those dead cards in it, it has a lot of Planeswalkers, it has a lot of big creatures, and then the Court of Callings are actually pretty good against Control with the limited counterspells that they were playing at the time. So it's not a terrible matchup. It definitely is one of the harder matchups. And the biggest threat is the what's the artifact that exiles everything?
Perilous Vault.
Yeah, Perilous Vault was really a killer in that one.
I mean, also the fact that Control is kind of quiet right now, just because it's early in the format, could help this list be prevalent. And the fact that like Hornet's Nest in that number just stops a lot of decks dead in their tracks. The only other deck I'd be worried about, I guess, would be like Green White Devotion, but you do have some ways to go over the top of them and burn them out.
Right. Yeah, there are a lot of flyers in here, and like the Ashcloud Phoenix can beat the Devotion deck pretty well, as well as the Stormbreath Dragon. Some of the cool things you can do with this one are there's one Crater's Claws in the deck and two Chandra Pyromancer in the deck. Pyromaster, excuse me. And so in a last-ditch effort, or, you know, if you just want to go over top with those tokens, you can start to shoot your own Hornet Nest. And Chandra can do that really well. That's the, you know, the plus one. So basically, you're dealing yourself one and getting a 1/1 Death Touch flyer every time you activate that, which seems pretty bonkers if your goal is to defend that Chandra.
I'm just looking at this deck, and, like, if you're trying to go big, if you're trying bigger than your opponent,
mm-hmm.
Is there not a warrant for some number of Thunderbreak Regent?
There could be. I mean, I think that the having the Ash Cloud Phoenix is better on its
big
own,
enough.
And there's
okay.
just not enough room to run a couple of Thunderbreak Regents in here. There's
yeah,
only
I think
space for one Ash Cloud in the main deck, or two.
And that's why I think that Ash Cloud, if you're going to run lower numbers, is better, because... he's really specific. It's very hard to remove him. He can do tricks where there may be stalls in the game where you want to just keep flipping him back and forth. And versus Thunderbreak Regent, you know, usually he's just going to die. They're going to take three. And in a deck like this where you're not always putting the pressure on him, that's not necessarily something that is going to be beneficial. I think if anything, Corey here, like, I'd like to see less Pelucranos, less Setessan Tactics, and more Ash Cloud Phoenix and Storm Breath, just so you have a little better game against Devotion or board stalls. And I also saw the four Magma Spray in the board. I don't know if maybe you'd want to cut that down for some variety there, even Wild Slash or something different.
Right. Yeah, I think the Magma Spray, and this that came from Caleb's list, and he argued Magma Spray over Wild Slash because of the Ash Cloud on the other side of the table. That's a pretty big threat. I really like the Ash Clouds in this deck, and speaking of control, I know we kind of moved on from that topic, but I'll add one quick caveat to that, is the Ash Cloud's really good against control, and the amount of mana that you generate in this deck and the amount of mana you can generate with one of the three Xenagos, you're always able to flip those guys back over and deal the damage.
For sure, and the Magma Spray point that Caleb was making too, we got to take into perspective also that that was back in February, I think, when you wrote that article, when Ash Cloud was really prevalent. Now it's not anymore. So, like, I think now you can afford to cut it down, maybe put some more Crater's Claws in there to have a little bit more use with your mana, as you'd say, too.
Okay. All right. Cool. So I'll keep that deck updated. There's a list with Caleb's updates in February as well, and I'm going to keep an eye on that as he comes out with new innovations to that deck. But I'm interested to see what comes out of Dragons and Tarkir for this one. I had been thinking a little bit of trying one of the Atarkas in there that deals the 8 damage divided. I'm not sure how I feel about that card. I really wish it would hit the opponent in the face, but it doesn't. But that's something you could definitely ramp into with the Xenagos and potentially even cord out with the amount of bees you might have on the field. That would be pretty sweet instant speed play, and then attack with an 8/8 trample the next turn.
I know we're running very low on time here, guys, but... if you can, take a quick look over at that standard open that we had up before. And just take a 2-second look at this, at the 22nd place list. Because, Corey, it kind of delves into the same territory that you're looking at right here.
Okay.
And you'll see there's 4 Dragonlord Atarka and 2 of the Green-White Dragon. So he's got a lot of the same stuff going on. There's also a reprint. I don't know if you guys noticed standard reprinted Explosive Vegetation in this set, too.
Oh, yeah, it did.
I thought that was really spicy, and
well,
I tried it online. Yeah, I tried it online, and I was like, this deck's insane. Like, it just, you have Courser and Keratid, the normal package, then you have Explosive Vegetation, and then your top end is just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, Dragonlord Atarka, Dragonlord Dromoka, 2 Elspeth, Nissa, and 2 Ugin. Ugin just seems like the ultimate top end card right now. Like, it does everything you want.
Pretty busted.
Very busted. All right, and this one's got Frontier Siege for ramp, as well as the Explosive Vegetation and Coursers and regular Mana Dorks.
It has the Haven of the Spirit Dragon for Dragon Regrow, too.
Yeah. Secure the Waste. I don't know what that's doing in there.
That card, yeah, so that was a card that everybody in my chat group was confused about. Having played it online now, that card is just like an awesome flex spot card. Instant speed, raise the alarm, or instant speed, make 7 tokens and then just kill you out of nowhere. It just seems like actually a great card for this list, even though it looks really bizarre when you're looking at it on paper.
Yeah, you followed up with the Shamanic Revelation. There's one of those in there.
Because a lot of times, like, just casting a dragon is nice and all, but, like, you know, the board may have more going on, and this gives you a way, I feel like, to go wide.
All right.
This is a spicy meatball.
It is a spicy meatball. All right, so we got to keep things going here. Daryl, would you like to introduce your leg day segment?
Sure, absolutely. So, basically, everyone has different skills in Magic Gathering. You're good at playing control. You're good at building a deck. Good at combat math, and, you know, so you'll tend to slot yourself into those abilities. You'll say, all right, I'm going to play a bunch of control decks. I'm going to build those because I know what I'm doing. Eventually, you're going to get really good at it. Eventually, you're going to do well. The problem is that there's some things you just don't work out. You know, some people like to work out. They'll lift a lot of arm weights. They'll do a lot of bench press. They'll look really good. They won't work out their legs a lot. So, the problem with that is you can't skip leg day. Otherwise, your legs are going to get weak, and you're not going to be able to carry yourself on through the rest of everything you have to deal with. And that's the same thing here in Magic. Like, if you let your combat math abilities kind of deteriorate, if you let your ability to deck build and to think outside the box and to learn how to sideboard deteriorate, you'll become a worse Magic player overall. So what we're kind of looking to do with this segment is just pick on the different weaknesses of the members of our podcast. I know some of us suck at playing red cards. I'll admit that. Some of us are not so great with the control deck in their hands. But we're going to pick on different and various weaknesses of the people on the podcast, have them go out and address it, and then kind of bring back a report of, you know, hey, this is what we did. We'll know that in this podcast. We did it. These are the notes I took. Somebody, you know, give me some critique, give me some feedback. You know, how would you see this pick order if we're doing draft? Or how would you have played in this spot? Because this spot was a really tough spot and I didn't know how to handle it. So I've kind of fatigued in this region. So we're going to try and put one of these out there for, you know, discussion every week, starting with the first one. I'll come back next week, give information, because I'm going to pick on myself as far as this goes. And then we'll kind of put the next challenge out there. You know, I don't have to explain it as much. I am a really bad limited player. I haven't touched 3 packs of Magic cards unopened for a deck in about 5 years. So I'm going to go draft on Friday night, and I'm going to probably draft very badly. But I'm going to try and take a note of a lot of pick orders that I thought were really tough. And I'm going to try not to slot myself into the, like, oh, I'm just going to pick all the removal spells and controlling cards and then try and figure out how to kill you with some random creature. I'm going to try and build, like, a very strong draft deck and see kind of what combat situations I get into that I'm not used to, how to play around tricks, see if I can kind of work all this out in my skill set, and then bring back the results and kind of let the drafters of the podcast, I know that John loves to draft, I know that Brandon, you like to play limited occasionally, and I don't know about Corey if you like to draft as well.
Oh yeah, I like to draft.
So I'll have these 3 guys kind of pick my game apart and let me know what I did good, what I did bad, and then we'll kind of tee one up for next week and see where we go from there.
All right, so is that something we're discussing right now then?
No, there's not really much discussion. I mean, that's kind of what's going to happen. Next week there will be a lot of discussion about it, because I'll bring back a report on the draft to say, you know, this is the archetype I went into based on what I opened, based on what I saw, trying to figure out how I should read signals might be part of it, and then trying to figure out how to build the deck and cut cards and things like that. And so a lot of that discussion will happen next week when I bring back the draft report.
Okay, right on. So here's what I suggest then is when you're drafting, pay attention to when in the draft you are committing to the amount of colors you're playing.
Sure.
And where you're taking your curve into consideration and all that.
Yep. Perfect. So there will be a ton of feedback for this segment next week, and then we'll tee another one up and send someone else out trying to build up their atrophied skills again.
Okay, cool. So we'll come up with a new someone to be tortured for the following week with a leg day.
Of course.
All right.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how this draft goes, because I actually didn't even get a chance to draft any Fate Reforged, and I haven't drafted Dragons yet. Did any of the rest of you guys, Brandon and Shuming, did you guys draft at all?
I did a sealed pre-release. So,
you know, zero draft experience.
My experience was ramped to Dragons.
What about Fate Reforged? Did you guys draft any of that?
No.
Nope.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, we're all in for a treat then.
Yeah, maybe we should all just draft once.
Yeah, right.
So we're going to send the worst drafter into the format that none of us have played. And we're going to see how poorly that ends.
Yeah, most of us can act like experts on it.
Of course, that's you guys are the talking head pundits, and I'm just going to take a punishment. Like it's easy game, easy life.
I think we all need to draft at this point. I think whoever said that was right because this sounds pretty atrocious.
Yeah, can we all just go to the gym together, guys?
Maybe we can if you'd really like. This will definitely be a bad beat stories. I'll be paying up a couple dollars here on how I got beaten badly in a draft and I didn't deserve it, even though I have no clue what I'm doing. So,
All right, Gerald, I'm gonna do some reps with you, man. I'm gonna draft this week too.
I got a couple draft reports. Perfect.
All right, pump you up. All right, guys, that brings us to our Section 7 non-magic in general sign off. I'm gonna jump in and start real quick because I had something delivered to me during the course of this podcast from my roommate Sam, and that is a card called Grounded. I don't know if you guys are aware of that one. It's from Oh my gosh, Avacyn Restored maybe, and it is an enchantment aura for one and a green that says enchanted creature loses flying. Possibly the worst card in that draft set, and we always made fun of it. But the fact that it's called Grounded turned it into a little bit of a prank game that I did with quite a few of my friends. And And every once in a while, you might be like, putting your foot into your shoe, and you feel something down there. And when you take your foot out, there's a grounded underneath it. Or you open up the oatmeal canister, and there's a grounded sitting in your oatmeal. I've had some of these, like, mailed to me, like, in mass. I've had a postcard made with groundeds printed on it in a mosaic fashion. a friend of mine delivered in a sealed Ascension game. I don't know if you know the board game Ascension. And somehow he had, like, broken through the factory seal and snuck a grounded into the box. It was pretty incredible. So when I opened the box, there was the grounded in there. But I encourage you to try this yourself and post pictures of your grounded pranks on our Facebook because I think it's pretty freaking fun.
Corey, I'll have to say that that was definitely a magic-related segment because that friendship was just really magical.
No, it has to do with magic cards. We were not playing the game of magic at the time.
What did you guys do last week? Anybody do anything fun?
I got really disappointed over basketball games.
I did not. Sorry, Daryl.
What are you talking about?
I'm a Notre Dame fan. I'm from Indiana. So the fact that they threw away their game against Kentucky made me very sad. And I drowned away my sorrows with part of a bacon stuffed crust pizza. So it was okay, all in all. You know.
All right.
Take the good with the best.
Rooting for your Irish, man. I thought they were taking that one, but yeah. Well, hopefully the Badgers will take care of business.
Yeah, I was bummed too. I'd rather the Badgers got to beat Notre Dame than Kentucky.
Oh, not nice.
All right, anybody else? Non-magic?
Well, in case you guys haven't noticed, we have a great new banner for our podcast that I created, and so I've kind of been spending the last week brushing up on my Adobe Illustrator skills. So at work, we have a logo design contest to try to get people to recycle. And the winner of the contest gets free extended lunch for the day. So that's where my life's at right now, just trying to get an extra 15 minutes tacked onto that lunch.
Dude, Brandon, I thought that logo was awesome, man. I don't care what anybody else says. I was like, wait, the magic card as the wheels? What the hell?
The cinder blocks holding up our stolen card.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, true. The cinder blocks.
And I have this in playmat size, so we can get those printed at some point. I think it's about $25 a piece. I think it'll be worthwhile, don't you?
I'd rock that play, man.
Yeah.
That seems sweet. That seems like a wonderful idea.
If you are unsure as to what image we're talking about, shameless plug, go to facebook.com/cardknocklifepodcast and you will see it there as our image. I think this will be our official source of communication between listeners and podcast hosts because we have we've accumulated quite a bit of growth on that page already. So I like it better than Twitter. I don't know about you guys. I can actually understand Facebook.
Oh, you have little Twitter faith.
Well, I'm not limited to like however many characters you have on Twitter. You can post links and stuff here. I like that.
You can post links on Twitter too. There are websites that shrink them down.
Oh, I told you I don't understand that.
Well, you know what you can do is just integrate the two, and I think that's probably the easiest. So we can get that going, maybe, and get it rocking and rolling.
All right. So should we do Twitters, or do you guys have any other non-magic stuff to chat about here?
No, stuff. Yeah, it's about to be warm. I'm prepared for winter to go away from this godforsaken place we live.
Yeah, that is Wisconsin. For Brandy.
I think you said it best, Daryl, when you asked why we live in a place where the air hurts our face.
It doesn't make any sense.
Why do we do that? Oh, man.
Well, the air doesn't hurt your face this week. It was 56 today. It was pretty beautiful for spring weather in Wisconsin. So I'll take that any day.
All right, Twitter handles.
My Twitter is at HoldMusicMKE. I still have 0 followers. I was incorrect last week. I didn't have 2. I had 0. So you can be the first one. And I might tweet one day, too. John, you have a Twitter, right?
Yeah, Red Deck Winning.
All right, Jumeng, you made a Twitter.
That's right, at X1N23456, and I have accumulated a follower already, so you guys can see that. Oh,
man, you beat me. What does that mean, X1N?
Oh, it's the gearbox on a motorcycle.
Oh, okay, all right. Cool, and you beat everyone else to that one, huh?
No one else
has that account. And Daryl?
Big D's right on Twitter. Also, same thing on Twitch. Gonna try and fire the stream. I didn't get to it last week, but tomorrow we'll be streaming a Modern Daily. It'll probably be at 9 o'clock, so it'll be super late Central Time. But probably gonna stream a Modern Daily playing Five Color Control. Probably gonna try and stream as much as I can just to produce extra content for the people that are complete Magic degenerates and like to watch people play Magic online, which makes me want to hurt myself anyways. But, you know, I do what I can.
Right on. All right, well, that is the end of our cast for tonight.
Oh, we forgot Brandon.
Oh, shoot. Brandon, you got a Twitter?
You guys didn't forget anything. I got 0 followers with my 0 Twitter names.
Well, maybe it's because you put Jason off show and tell.
If you put your Skype picture on your Twitter, I think you'll get some followers. I don't know what's going on with these Pokemon with rockets strapped to them, but it's pretty sweet.
All right. Well, I think we're good for this week.
All right. That is the end then. All right. We'll see you guys next week on Card Knock Life, where bad beats are just $1.